Today is March the 10th. Today we discover who is Job. Our Sundays, as we read through the Bible a year, are dedicated to poetry. Last Sunday, we finished book one of the book of Psalms. We'll take a break from the book of Psalms and turn to the first book of Hebrew poetry, the book of Job. The book of Job starts with two chapters of prose, is followed by speeches and dialogues all in poetry, and then ends with one other chapter of prose. In the first chapter, we're introduced to the three characters of the book of Job: God, the Satan, and Job himself. Job was a rich man who ended up losing everything that he had. Well, the question of the book of Job, what the entire book is about, is called theodicy. Theodicy is a Greek word basically asking the question, is God just? How can bad things happen to good people? That question is addressed by, first of all, an exchange between God and a character called the Satan. It's not so much a name as a title, the adversary. And God agrees to allow Job to be tested. Well, as Satan tests Job, he causes him to lose everything, all of his wealth, all of his family, even his wife leaves him, and then finally he loses his health. Throughout all of this, Job follows God, but he has a nagging question. We'll get into the questions next Sunday. For today, let's ask the question, is this history or is this a parable? You know, it's really hard to say. The bottom line is it doesn't really matter because the questions that the book of Job raises are valid, whether this is a historical figure or whether this is a parable, much like Jesus's parables. Having said that, it is interesting that twice in the Old Testament, Job is referred to. In the book of Ezekiel chapter 14, verses 14 and 20, Job is mentioned with Daniel and Noah, two other historical figures. In the same way, in the book of Micah, Job is mentioned, although he's mentioned alone. In the book of James in the New Testament, chapter 5, verse 11, again, Job is mentioned, although he occurs alone. The fact that he is mentioned with two other historical figures in Ezekiel 14 tends to imply that Job is indeed a historical figure, not Jewish, but a worshiper of God. Enjoy today as you begin your reading of the book of Job.
There once was a man named Job who lived in the land of Uz. He was blameless, a man of complete integrity. He feared God and stayed away from evil. He had 7 sons and 3 daughters. He owned 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 teams of oxen, and 500 female donkeys. He also had many servants. He was, in fact, the richest person in that entire area. Job's sons would take turns preparing feasts in their homes, and they would also invite their 3 sisters to celebrate with them. When these celebrations ended, sometimes after several days, Job would purify his children. He would get up early in the morning and offer a burnt offering for each of them. For Job said to himself, "Perhaps my children have sinned and have cursed God in their hearts." This was Job's regular practice. One day, the members of the heavenly court came to present themselves before the Lord, and the accuser, Satan, came with them. "Where have you come from?" the Lord asked Satan. Satan answered the Lord, "I have been patrolling the earth, watching everything that's going on." The Lord asked Satan, "Have you noticed my servant Job? He is the finest man in all the earth. He is blameless, a man of complete integrity. He fears God and stays away from evil." Satan replied to the Lord, "Yes, but Job has no good reason to fear God. You have always put a wall of protection around him and his home and his property. You have made him prosper in everything he does. Look how rich he is. But reach out and take away everything he has, and he will surely curse you to your face." "All right, you may test him," the Lord said to Satan. "Do whatever you want with everything he possesses, but don't harm him physically." So Satan left the Lord's presence. One day, Job's sons and daughters were feasting at the oldest brother's house. A messenger arrived at Job's home with this news. "Your oxen were plowing, with the donkey feeding beside them. When the Sabaeans raided us, they stole all the animals and killed all the farmhands. I am the only one who escaped to tell you." While he was still speaking, another messenger arrived with this news. "The fire of God has fallen from heaven and burned up your sheep and all the shepherds. I am the only one who escaped to tell you." While he was still speaking, a third messenger arrived with this news. "Three bands of Chaldean raiders have stolen your camels and killed your servants. I am the only one who escaped to tell you." While he was still speaking, another messenger arrived with this news. "Your sons and daughters were feasting in their oldest brother's home. Suddenly, a powerful wind swept in from the wilderness and hit the house on all sides. The house collapsed, and all your children are dead. I am the only one who escaped to tell you." Job stood up and tore his robe in grief. Then he shaved his head and fell to the ground to worship. He said, "I came naked from my mother's womb, and I will be naked when I leave. The Lord gave me what I had, and the Lord has taken it away. Praise the name of the Lord." In all this, Job did not sin by blaming God. One day, the members of the heavenly court came again to present themselves before the Lord, and the accuser, Satan, came with them. "Where have you come from?" the Lord asked Satan. Satan answered the Lord, "I have been patrolling the earth, watching everything that's going on." Then the Lord asked Satan, "Have you noticed my servant Job? He is the finest man in all the earth. He is blameless, a man of complete integrity. He fears God and stays away from evil, and he has maintained his integrity even though you urged me to harm him without cause." Satan replied to the Lord, "Skin for skin, a man will give up everything he has to save his life, but reach out and take away his health, and he will surely curse you to your face." "All right, do with him as you please," the Lord said to Satan, "but spare his life." So Satan left the Lord's presence and struck Job with terrible boils head to foot. Job scraped his skin with pieces of broken pottery as he sat among the ashes. His wife said to him, "Are you still trying to maintain your integrity? Curse God and die." But Job replied, "You talk like a foolish woman. Should we accept only good things from the hand of God and never anything bad?" So in all of this, Job said nothing wrong. When three of Job's friends heard of the tragedy he had suffered, they got together and traveled from their homes to comfort and console him. Their names were Eliphaz the Temanite, Bildad the Shuhite, and Zophar the Naamathite. When they saw Job from a distance, they scarcely recognized him. Wailing loudly, they tore their robes and threw dust into the air over their heads to show their grief. Then they sat on the ground with him for 7 days and nights. No one said a word to Job, for they saw that his suffering was too great for words. At last Job spoke, and he cursed the day of his birth. He said, "Let the day of my birth be erased, and the night I was conceived. Let the day be turned into darkness. Let it be lost even to God on high, and let no light shine on it. Let the darkness and utter gloom claim that day for its own. Let a black cloud overshadow it, and let the darkness terrify it. Let that night be blotted off the calendar, never again to be counted among the days of the year, never again to appear among the months. Let that night be childless. Let it have no joy. Let those who are experts at cursing, whose cursing could arouse Leviathan, curse that day. Let its morning stars remain dark. Let it hope for light, but in vain. May it never see the morning light. Curse that day for failing to shut my mother's womb, for letting me be born to see all this trouble. Why wasn't I born dead? Why didn't I die as I came from the womb? Why was I laid on my mother's lap? Why did she nurse me at her breast? Had I died at birth, I would now be at peace. I would be asleep and at rest. I would rest with the world's kings and prime ministers, whose great buildings now lie in ruins. I would rest with princes rich in gold, whose palaces were filled with silver. Why wasn't I buried like a stillborn child, like a baby who never lives to see the light? For in death the wicked cause no trouble, and the weary are at rest. Even captives are at ease in death, with no guards to curse them. Rich and poor are both there, and the slave is free from his master. Oh, why give light to those in misery, and life to those who are bitter? They are longing for death, and it won't come. They search for death more eagerly than for hidden treasure. They are filled with joy when they finally die, and rejoice when they find the grave. Why is life given to those with no future, those God has surrounded with difficulties? I cannot eat for sighing. My groans pour out like water. What I always feared has happened to me. What I dreaded has come true. I have no peace, no quietness. I have no rest. Only trouble comes.
Scripture reading from the New Living Translation by Emily Herrera. Like, follow, and subscribe to this devotional on whatever platform you use to listen to it. Email your questions to us at questions@becomehope.com. Tomorrow, we finish reading the book of Numbers.